This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 221 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuddersincpodcast.com, and joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you, mate?
I'm just finishing off last week's minute silence. I didn't get time to, because I don't listen to the episodes, of course. I couldn't do it last week. Just give me a couple more seconds, dude.
Okay. Yeah, that'll do.
I'm done. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, have you been?
Reflect on the Hasselblad for which, you know, have I been? I've been bloody marvellous. Yeah, really.
Excellent.
Good.
Good to hear.
It's been an awesome week. I tried to relive my 20s last week.
Right. Was it successful?
Very unsuccessful. Well, mentally, my body.
Oh, okay.
My body ate 20. I went out 4 nights in a row.
Wow.
Yeah, 4 in a row, but with kids and all. It was just, you know, as in having children in your life and still getting to go out 4 nights is astounding.
Now, you went and saw some live concerts, didn't you?
3 in a row, yeah. So I had a family dinner for one, so that sort of numbed the brain for the rest of the week. And then 3 concerts in a row, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night.
And who were the concerts?
Well, I saw Black Sabbath on the Wednesday night.
Right.
Yep. And then my favourite band, They Might Be Giants, on the Thursday and Friday.
Yeah. Wow.
But the thing is, I went to the concert Thursday night, and the Wednesday night, the hard floor, standing for a couple of hours, I was starting to feel a bit tender. The Thursday night, you have to queue up and stand there, and feeling pretty tender towards the end of the concert. Friday, I've got to do a workshop.
So
I'm staggering it in like Ozzy Osbourne. If you see the way he walks, that was kind of me. Finish that, straight to a concert again. Oh. I'm gone. About quarter of an hour before the show starts. Just from standing up, and so I'm a wreck. So come Saturday's workshop, you know, I was like just dragging my left legs behind me, and it was just. I'm not as young as I used to be. But we had some fun, and I got to tell you, I had probably the most uncomfortable band experience I think I've ever had.
Oh, at which gig?
At the 2 They Might Be Giants gigs.
Right, and what was that?
I was standing room only.
Yeah.
Sold out gigs.
Yeah.
I was front row.
Right.
So close to the lead singer on a very low, short stage that, well, we were almost nose to nose.
Right.
Yeah, there would be like, 2.5 feet between us.
Oh, okay.
And he's reasonably, relatively short, and I'm relatively tall, and the stage wasn't very high. You didn't know where to look. He's looking straight into the guy's eyes, and he's looking straight into yours because you're right in front of him.
And you're blocking the view for everybody else.
And it's like, it's like if you go to a stripper and they stand in front of you, you don't know where to look. You know, you got to look off the exit signs. You look around. It's like every time he glanced at me and I'd turn away and I'd look at him and he'd turn away. It was, I was so close that at one stage I was doing an iPhone video and he leaned forward and put his forehead on my screen. I mean, we're talking close.
Wow.
It was both wonderful and kind of creepy. Yeah.
Imagine how it was for him.
for all of us, in fact. It was kind of weird, you know, but very much fun. So,
and did Sabbath play Paranoid?
The final song, yeah.
Cool.
It's about the only song that he put any sort of vocal effort into. The rest he read off a cheat sheet or something.
Right.
Musically, it was an awesome night, but vocally, a little bit to be desired.
Right.
But, you know, he's lived the life and... Mm-hmm. Now he's reaping the rewards.
Fair enough.
Yeah. When you see this old guy staggering around on stage, it was kind of weird. But a fun night out. I was fortunate enough to be given a free ticket.
Cool.
So you cannot complain.
No.
I wouldn't have actively gone to see it. But yeah, I've always been a fan of Tommy Iommi, the guitarist. So it was good to see him. And he hasn't lost any of his abilities. So that was kind of cool to see.
Yeah, right.
So. And, you know, I've got to tell you, I felt seriously lacking in testosterone. There was so much testosterone in this building, you know. You're walking through the crowds, and I'm talking masses of facial hair and bulging muscles and testosterone oozing out. And that was just the women.
Yeah.
I mean, the men were huge. There's one guy went past, he'd be about 7'14". It was huge.
Right.
So it was a night of very, very, very unusual looking people. And for a person who loves watching people, it was awesome.
Yeah, right.
It's just the more interesting people in our society. It was crazy. So,
excellent.
Shall we talk about something to do with photo?
Yeah.
Now,
given that you were just mentioning having to run workshops after this frolicking.
Yes, the stagger lurch workshops, we call those.
You're running a competition during the month of May.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, Bruce. I'm running a competition during the month of May.
I never would have guessed.
I had to decide for a while whether there's going to be two prizes or one. I ended up just going with the one.
Oh, okay.
And the deal is, if anyone books a creative photo workshop during the month of May, they go into the draw to win a half day one-on workshop with me and a model.
Wow, awesome.
Second prize was going to be a full day, but I figured we don't want to put anyone through that sort of punishment. So. Half a day's enough.
I ain't got time for that. Nobody got time for that.
I got the brains for that. So, half a day with me and some, depending on what type, if I get a male, it'll be a female model. If I get a female, it'll be a male model that they can choose.
Yep.
They can tell me what they want to learn and we'll spend the day doing it.
Awesome.
I thought it'd be a bit of fun, something a bit different.
So when you say book a workshop in May, it could be booked in May but not actually executed till later?
Yeah, so I mean, I've got stuff like my casting call weekend up there in October. That if you deposit on that, you go into the draw. And to be fair, for everybody, anyone who's already got a booking in place, they've gone into the draw as well.
Oh, cool.
Just, you know, that's just, yeah, what if you booked on like April 29 and this bugger comes out on May 1 and says this? It's just not fair. I wouldn't have been if it was me. Everything in life I try and do is like, well, how would I feel if someone did that to me?
Yeah,
you know. So if I booked on 2 days before this special, and I've saved hard, and it meant a lot to me to get to this event, and then something cool came up afterwards, I'd be a little disappointed. So just to make it fair, everybody's in the draw who's got an existing booking. So
fair enough.
So it'll be fun. I love getting out one on ones, and don't do enough of them. I love doing small groups and one on one. And doing stuff with camera clubs because everyone knows each other, so it's always kind of fun. That kind of stuff's great. So,
and the thing about doing it one on one is you as the tutor will actually have time to finesse a shot.
Well, you know, hopefully, you never want to put yourself under that sort of pressure. Because then the expectations you actually take something good. We try and have as many excuses for not doing that as possible. No, it's all about you. It's your day. No, I insist on you taking all the time shooting. I'll just grab these couple of quickies.
Now, last week we asked about gear lust. If you
had an
unlimited budget, what would you like to have in your kit that you don't already have?
Well, I kind of meant it as being a one-piece thing. People have gone nutso. They've gone absolutely nutso. You know, there's a pack of greedy bugs out there, I tell you. Oh, I want it all!
Yeah.
I'll have three of those, two of these, and six of these.
Quite a few people expressed an interest in the 400mm f2.8 lens.
It's called having a very small penis. I think the winner of that category is going to be Carl, who wants the 800mm. That's, of course, why I was looking for the 8mm fisheye, of course. But look, I've got to tell you, the 400mm 2.8 would be an awesome piece of kit, wouldn't it?
I mean, if you were the sort of person that liked to go on holiday in Africa and, go on safari or something, a 400mm 2.8 would be phenomenal.
You know, yes.
I'm not sure what else you would use it for, to be honest.
I would use it as a portrait lens.
Well, I suppose there's that. But you'd have to be shooting on a bloody monopod, wouldn't you? I mean,
well, God. Yes. If you're not as steady as I am, Bruce, it's not my problem. Well, yeah, absolutely. If you had monopod, tripod, laying down the ground, you know, whatever it takes, effectively. But yeah, if it's all about getting the look, the look from something like that's quite astounding. So
I imagine,
I've shot a lot with 300mm 2.8s of portraits, and the look is just stunning. It just there's a quality and a feel to the look. Just it's all about feel. There's a feel to the look of the image that is just unlike anything else you see. It's partially that compression, that minimal depth of field, et cetera,
et cetera. I don't know if you mentioned it simply because that was the thing I put up as my wish list. I'd love a 300 2.8.
You know, last week I would have said the same thing to you.
Why is that?
Well, because I would have exactly the same. I've lusted after a 300mm 2.8 for ages. Until today.
I've actually considered, at times in the past, whether or not I would lash out and buy a 70 to 200 2.8, and always wondered, would I prefer that, or would I prefer a 300 2.8 prime? And I actually think I'd prefer the 300, to be honest.
Well, I would have said so before today as well, but today, I've changed my mind.
To what?
Well, let me regale you with a story, Bruce.
Please do.
I had this young
model. Keep it short, we've only got an hour.
So part one we'll do this week. Right. it's a wee short story. Yeah. My good mate David Oakley.
Yeah.
Who does my web stuff, and he's a lovely, lovely guy.
He's a top guy. He did my website as well.
So he's a lovely man.
We love David.
We love David. Just no one say that because David doesn't listen to this.
If
you know. Of course not.
Well, I know. I rescind my comment. I don't like
it. No, I was just going to say, look, if you know David and you hear these comments, don't pass them on, because we believe in the treat him mean, keep him keen kind of philosophy. But never let them know how you really feel. But no, he got in touch with me last week, as we know, always in regular contact, but he got in touch with me and said he's just about to order a Sigma 120 to 300 2.8.
What?
The Sigma 120 to 300 2.8.
Wow.
Fixed 2.8 all the way through the range. And I said, and this is where the discussion came in. It was like, where can I get it from? I can see it online overseas. I've had some trouble finding anyone in Australia who can hook me up with one. And today, me and Dave Oakley were catching up, because we're going to be shooting a model for today. She's an actress, wants to do some portfolio shots. So, a bit of fun. We'd get together for funsies for me and Dave, and so we get to hang out. And the model cancelled 2 minutes before arrival. 2 minutes before arrival time.
No.
So we were kind of stuck. But, always turn negatives into positives.
Yep.
The location we happened to be in, which I had never really paid much attention to, we had a little walk around to have a cup of coffee. We found this awesome new workshop we're going to do, a new city walk, or an urban walk we're going to do, which is just phenomenal.
Oh, okay. Just based then, on the location.
On the location where we're getting this cup of coffee. And then we were driving back, and he started complaining about the lack of service from this, trying to get this lens sorted out. So I made a call. We'd just driven from North Melbourne, where we were, to Chelsea. For those who don't know, that's in Melbourne, driving an hour and 20 driving time.
Right.
Just about got there. And I said, let me make a phone call to my mate in Melbourne. So I called my mate in Melbourne, because I've got one in stock.
Oh, yeah.
I can do this rip up right. So he turned around, drove all the damn way back. And we went and picked it up. And he got it. And I tell you, it's a sweet, sweet looking lens. And built gorgeous.
So they come in both a Canon and a Nikon mount.
They do,
Do they come in a Sony mount?
Well, they're not that silly, are they? I mean, who's going to buy one? No. Honesty Tourette's again. Yeah, I can honestly tell you I don't know.
Okay, I'll be looking it up anyway.
But, you can get it. Have you seen those 3D printers?
I've heard of them. I haven't seen one, but yeah.
I reckon you might be able to get a 3D printer. Model up a Nikon to Sony converter and get them to print one out for you. But it is just sweet as all get out. And of course, the versatility to have 120 to 300.
Oh, that is awesome.
Or 2.8. And Dave went home, shot a couple of photos of his dog, and it looks gorgeous. Sharp as get out, you know. Beautiful look. Yeah.
I hesitate to ask, what's the damage?
You know, she not so bad.
Really?
Yeah. Not an awful lot more than the 70-200 2.8. No, much less.
What?
Yeah.
Seriously?
I reckon you could probably get it for, because I get extra special mates rates.
Yeah.
But I reckon you get it at probably 2.5.
What? You pay that for a 70-200.
Yeah. Or was it 3.5? I can't remember how much you paid for it.
Wow.
No, okay, I reckon 2.5. Yeah, as I said, it's not dissimilar in pricing to that. Let's just have a quick gander here. I hate to do this because it's a US site, but it'll give us a bit of a... Well, in the US, it's 2,500.
Yeah, right.
So in Australia, now
$50,
for people who know me, that I'm sponsored by Tamron.
Yeah.
But people who also know me know I'll always recommend the right product, regardless of brand and regardless of what I'm sponsored by. So I think if you're in the market for this sort of high-end, big portrait, versatile sports, versatile wildlife, that's a pretty cool piece of kit.
That is a corker of a focal range to cover.
That's awesome, and it's as sharp as get out. Yeah,
yeah, plus. Right.
They've got matching 1.4 and 2 times converters.
Oh, wow.
What we mean by matching, for those who don't know, means that where their elements are spaced is designed for the lenses being used. So there's optimal quality.
Oh, right.
And, I think it's a lay down mazare if you're lusting for a 300mm 2.8, anybody out there, or even a 400 or Carl with his 800, 800. the 300mm 2.8 with a 2 times converter, you've got a 600mm 5.6. It's pretty good.
Yeah, there's your wildlife gig wrapped up.
And I've got to tell you, it's a hell of a lot smaller than the 300 2.8.
Really?
It still weighs almost 300 kilos. Yes, you did it 14 tripods to hold. Yeah, there had to be
comes
some
with
downside.
A 12-month steroid subscription.
There had to be some downside. three kilo weight. Yeah, so it's around about 3 kilo, which is not light but not super heavy. You know, the longer the day goes, the heavier it gets.
Yeah,
but you know, I think all my gear luster, you know, I was when I suggested it last week, I was thinking 300 2.8 as well, because I've used one a lot and I always love it.
Yeah, right.
I'm lucky enough that Canon give me their 300 2.8 whenever I need it.
Wow.
But you know, Mr. Sigma, how you doing? Because I know the people who import Sigma to Australia pretty darn well. But as I said, I'm sponsored by Tamron, so I'm kind of, I'm not allowed to use Sigma lenses.
just get a Tamron badge and stick it over the top.
Yeah, just put them over the top. But I tell you, I'm impressed. I'm very, and I look at. I've been impressed with Sigma lenses for a long time. You know, one of my first lenses back in 1980 was a Sigma 600mm f/8 mirror lens.
Yeah, right. Man,
love that sucker. You know?
What are mirror lenses like to use? I mean, other than the fact that you don't get a very very good. You don't get a very wide aperture, obviously, like f/8.
Well, it's 600 f/8. And it's fixed f/8, so there's no variable aperture.
Oh, so they don't close beyond that either.
That's it, yeah, 600 f/8.
All right.
And, to be honest, I can't remember. It's been so many freaking years. But, from memory, it doesn't. No, it's definitely 600 fixed f/8.
So it's all just shutter speed and ISO to control your exposure.
Exactly. And, of course, in those days, it was film, so you used whatever ISO you had in the camera. Yeah.
So you only had shutter speed to play with. Wow.
But you know, the other thing is it was a super light lens, so you don't have a weight factor to worry, so it does help a little bit there as well. But you know, there were great play around lens. You know, I've always liked the look, the out of focus look that mirror lenses give, the donut look.
Not familiar with it.
Okay, because it's got basically what a mirror lens is a Schmidt-Cassegrain style telescope. Okay, so what the Schmidt-Cassegrain design is basically light comes into the lens, bounces off a mirror, bounces up the back of the lens towards where it came in from.
Yes.
It's a secondary mirror, bounces back down through the tube. So
it basically does a Z shape.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, yeah. It was like a W/Z. Anyway, so it bounces through the lens through there. But to have this secondary mirror, it's got to be smack bang in the middle of the lens.
Yep.
So you've got this big black disc. If you look at the lens looking down onto
yes.
it. Yes. So of course, all your out of focus blur has this black dot in the middle.
Oh.
So you had this round. So if it's something that's round is out of focus because the out of focus blue, you've got this black dot in the middle. It looks like a donut.
Okay.
And maybe we'll see if we can find a photo on the net somewhere to show you. But I kind of always liked it.
Yeah, right.
But then again, I kind of like donuts too. So it could be some correlation there, you know. And food. Yeah, there was the Homer Simpson lens. So I've always liked it. And Sigma has some of the most amazing prime lenses for third party prime lenses out there going around. So, kudos. I kind of wish Tamron had a bit more in that way of stuff.
Yeah, right.
But what can you do? You know, I love what Tamron have.
Yep.
But I'm a greedy bugger. I want more. I want 120 to 300.
Yeah.
So that's what's on my gear list. That's really right up there.
Mate, you got me interested. I've got to go and look for this lens now.
It's cool as all get out.
And
it ticks a lot of boxes. It's got the focal range we want. It's not limited by being Sigma. 120 to 300. I just got distracted. AD BSO, as you know. 120 to 300 2.8 for Sony Alpha.
Oh, where's this? Where are you looking?
This is DP review.
Oh yeah.
So
nice.
Yeah, it's looking like maybe it's available. Going to be available at some stage, which would be fantastic for you.
Oh yeah.
And just don't tell them this is.
I think that's going on my Christmas list for sure.
Have you been naughty? Have you been nice though, dude? It'd be pretty nice to get that. But yeah, look, I think that solves so many. Yeah, it covers the desire for that big focal length with wide open. It's not because those things are buggers to work with as well because a fixed 300. Yeah, you got to commit to that sucker.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to commit to your distance.
You got to use your feet a hell of a lot with that lens.
And if something fast happens, especially if you're wildlife or you're birding or sport, you don't often have that ability to do that. You look at any of the guys shooting sport in any of the major sporting games, they've usually got the big one on the monopod and the smaller one with like a 70-200 slung over the shoulder.
Yeah.
Just in case, but this kind of the ability to back off that 300 mil certainly gives you that speed and flexibility, which is great. I got to tell you, weight wise, it's a hell of a lot smaller.
Yeah, right. So with the 28 to 70, and then that 120 to 300, I'd be happy to sacrifice the missing 50 mil from 70 to 120. I'd use my feet. To use the 24-70 and get closer or, walk further away to use the 120. I'd sacrifice that 50 mil in order to have the other 100 at the long end.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So
that sounds awesome.
And reading a little bit further down, I truly wish Sony Sigma would release a version of this one day soon. sorry for my... for my laughing at you. you poor... No, it's... I'll look into it. I've just looked at one site and it who knows, it doesn't necessarily look like it's available for Sony, but...
are you saying it's not?
Yeah, this sounds like it was some guy's wish list.
Oh, right.
But, that's... I haven't actually got to the Sigma site, because, why go to the source? You can bum around on 15 different other sites and get some spurious recommendations from people.
Now, just coming back to the Facebook commentary on the Gear Lust.
It's all about them, isn't it?
There was plenty of people lusting after different bodies, D3X, D3S, D4, D800s.
Years, but I'm stuck with the one I got.
What was that?
I've wanted a different body for years, but I'm stuck with the one.
Adam Davidson was sort of a little bit outside of the box, saying he'd like the new Phase 1 IQ 260.
Yeah, but he's a tosser. Yeah, he's just doing that. Oh, Adam, you know what you're like. Adam's awesome. No, honestly, he's a lovely guy because he helps me at my workshops quite a bit. I've got to be a bit nice to him, don't I? Look, that's it. I mean, the interesting comment was, and I don't know if this is an experience thing, and I think it's good that Adam actually mentioned that, that everyone was lusting after 35mm sensor bodies.
Yep.
And nothing, no one looking for something bigger.
Yeah.
Now, this week, I caught up, was it yesterday, funnily enough, yesterday I caught up with a guy called Bill Gekas.
Right.
G-E-K-A-S. And if you haven't looked up his photos on the net, he's an astounding amateur photographer who mostly just shoots his daughter in the style of the old master Renaissance paintings.
Oh, wow.
Does some phenomenal stuff. So I caught up with him for lunch yesterday. And because he gets a lot of world attention for his photos, and he shoots, and I'll say this not in any sort of derogatory way, only on Pentax.
Right.
Pentax loaned him one of their 645 cameras.
Oh,
and his
nice.
And his comment yesterday was, I'm really happy with what I got. You know, it can't be that much better. I'm really happy, but they kind of insisted that he loan it for a few months. So he goes, oh, I guess so. And the good thing is he found the menu system between the two cameras to be almost identical, so he felt very comfortable.
Right.
But as soon as he started getting the results, it's like, wow. You know, I thought I was doesn't
want to give it back.
Well, yeah, so the thing is, you know, everyone there was lusting after, 35mm style sensors.
Yeah.
And because we've all sort of fallen into, well, that's what a camera is these days.
Yeah.
Back in the day, back when I was a wee young lad in this industry, we all lusted after the Blads and the Mamiya. Everything was, we wanted bigger than 35. Now that's like the standard everybody wants.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of interesting that all those comments were about relatively small sensors.
Mm-hmm.
And only Adam was thinking big.
Yeah.
And I guess I was the same too. I wasn't really thinking I'd like something, monstrous in sensor size. So I'm thinking for the next casting call, I might get Hasselblad or Pentax on to give me a medium format for the weekend, and we'll take one of those up and shoot with and just to have a play as well.
Nice. Now, it's interesting that you mention, the fact that, 50 years ago, medium format was kind of like the standard that everyone aspired to. Just today, I came across a series of 6 videos on YouTube posted on the George Eastman House channel. And these 6 videos will only take you 20 minutes, half an hour to watch. And they are absolutely stunning.
Is that assuming a decent internet connection?
Yes, it does assume a decent internet connection. But these six movies were all about the different types of photographic image capture from the mid-1800s right through to today, starting with the daguerreotype and then, moving through these other ones, and the one that uses egg white, I can't remember what that's called. And then the silver gelatin process, and then the platinum process with its brushed edges, and it was just really interesting stuff. I had never been all that familiar with the whole technology of how images were captured in those in those embryonic days of photography. And just seeing the way these guys, managed to come up with these different ways of capturing an image, through using different metals and different chemicals.
Yeah,
and
they were geniuses. They really were. Once again, I think that there was an era of experimentation we just don't have these days. People will experiment maybe with Photoshop and different filters. But in those days, they were trying different materials and different ways of thinking and seeing. And, there's a real cutting edge kind of stuff, which we kind of don't have anymore.
Absolutely. So I highly recommend those videos. I'll put a link in the show notes.
I was going to say, what I'd do if I was you, I'd put a link in the show notes for people to look at that.
That's not a bad idea. I might just do that.
Here's a tip though. Every week, right? When we talk about stuff on the podcast, you should do that like somewhere.
That's awesome. Why didn't I think of that?
Is there a place you could recommend people to go and look at that sort
Absolutely.
Of stuff?
ShuttersIncPodcast.com. Or, of course, you can have a look on the ShuttersInc Facebook page because I post the notes up there as well. So
I've got to look at both of those these days. just back to the Sigma 120 to 300.
Oh, okay.
On the Sigma site, it's only available for Canon, Nikon, and, of course, Sigma cameras because they're so popular.
Right.
But their 300mm 2.8 is available for Sony Minolta mount, so I can only imagine.
Yeah,
it's just a matter of time.
Okay.
So that's, well, yeah.
Keep it on the wish list.
Wow. Awesome. Mm. Awesome. You know, the other thing I noticed about that wish list of things was everyone was after the big stuff. There wasn't a lot of Uber wides and, yeah. Maybe it's because more affordable. I don't know. Maybe because they're sort of more in the realm of, because they're only $1,000 or whatever dollars. They're sort of, they're more.
For a good wide angle.
Yeah, for a really good, an ultra wide or an 8mm fisheye or something like that. Yep. Maybe because it's more accessible to people. They might not own them, but they know they probably could if they really wanted to.
Yep.
Where, Carl's 800mm lens with the 12 times converter. Yes, I'd like to shoot Uranus. And Neptune and Mars and Jupiter. They're not really accessible. A 600mm f4 Canon lens is like $12,000.
Yeah.
$12,000, $14,000, something that sort of route. So, those things really just aren't justifiable. They're not a realistic thing unless we win the lotto.
Interesting story. You mentioned the 600 f4. A guy who I used to work with at the Australian Radio Network, he's since moved on. He picked up a 600 f4 for his Nikon.
Yeah.
Off eBay, out of Japan, for $8,000, which was a very good deal because they are about 12 new. Yeah. And this thing was pretty much brand new. And he managed, it got shipped out of Tokyo the day before the nuclear reactors melted down.
Oh, man.
He was so thankful.
That's disappointing. No, he's got to be disappointed because if he left it a couple of days longer, it would have been glow in the dark. It would have been easy to find. When you think about it, that nighttime shoot. Oh, where'd I put my lens? Yeah, that's the advantage of Canon. They're white. They're a bit easier to see.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's got a half life of 1,200 years. Yeah. But other than that.
Something else that I came up across this week was on an episode of The Grid, which is a video podcast over at KelbyTV.com.
You're not cheating on another podcast with us, are you, Bruce?
I actually am not. I'd not seen The Grid before I came across this particular episode. They had Tom Hogarty from Adobe on there talking about the future of Lightroom and the fact that Adobe is working on a version of Lightroom. Wait for it, iOS people, to run on the iPad.
Yeah.
Including
that's awesome.
Including the ability to edit RAW files on your iPad.
Take a break. That's stupid.
Why?
My iPad doesn't shoot RAW files. They shoot JPEGs. Yes. Unless they do, iOS 7's got the RAW capability. Now we're talking. If I could get my iPhone to shoot RAW files, damn.
I see
what you mean. You import the RAW files, is that what you're saying?
Yep. So, very interesting. I'll put a link to the video in the show notes. They start talking about it around about 11 and a half minutes into the video, and Tom actually starts the on-screen demo around about 19 minutes in, so if you can't
be... Is the rest just crappy stuff like we talk about? Or is it
so if you're like Glyn, have a very short attention span, you can jump 19 minutes in.
I was just cleaning my table. What were you saying? You think I'm joking?
Jump in 19... No, I can hear you. Mucking around there. You can jump in 19 minutes and you can actually see them running a very early beta of it on an iPad. He didn't suggest, well, at least not up to the point that I watched, as to when it would be available, but the fact that they're working on it is pretty exciting.
Do you think that might mean there's a mega iPad going to come out?
No, I don't think so. I think they're you know, of the impression that people are going to end up with cameras that are capable of wireless sync between, you know, between the camera body and the iPad, because you've got your iPad with you at the shoot. So you won't have to be wire, you know, tethered to your device like you do today with a laptop. You'll be able to just wirelessly blast your, you know, your RAW files from the card straight to your iPad, and then, you know, do some quick, you know, edits on the fly in the field on the RAW files and see what you've got, you know. So very interesting.
I just want a bigger screen.
On the iPad?
Yeah, for that. Yeah, I can just see that, you know, we've gone from the iPad, it's gone to the iPad mini. Yeah, everything's getting smaller, but mm-hmm. then like phones, all of a sudden it's going to get bigger and bigger, and yeah, there'll be a need for something you want to carry around, a 14-inch iPad or an 18-inch iPad.
Yeah, well, that's...
For more specialist
see,
uses.
That's why you go to Android, dude, because then you have choice.
What? No, I'm a sheep. I don't want that. I like my McHouse and my Apple. An apple a day keeps me happy. I love it as a teacher when people bring apples, but it's always the wrong type. Yeah, I wanted the 18-inch Pro. What are you doing? Yeah, I think there are some big tablet-type devices out there. Mm-hmm. I think don't ask me why, but Pioneer.
They're called laptops.
No, but seriously, it's full actual tablets. I think Microsoft Surface may be one, but there's one that was like is it like a 24-inch tablet? Yeah, it's a mofo to carry around, but
that's huge.
It has. You know, you can imagine.
It'd be like the 80s all over again with a massive boombox on your shoulder.
But yeah, you can see it on the plane, can't you, though? You know? Yeah, you're in a row of three. One guy pulls out his iPad mini, you know. Next guy looks at him, pulls out his iPad, and you're, playing this like a flag. Takes up half the row.
Can I just balance this on your knees?
Now that's free.
Oh, dear. Now, while we're talking Adobe...
Yes.
In the last 24 hours at Adobe Max over in the US, Adobe have announced that there will be no Creative Suite 7. From here on out, everything is Creative Cloud and all of their apps are subscription only. And this has obviously, you know, caused up a lot of debate and discussion over the interwebs in the last 24 hours, and I dare say it will continue for a long time to come. What are your thoughts on it, Glenn?
I think it's the most sensible thing they've done in years.
Really?
Yeah, if I was Adobe.
Why?
Well, CS is one of the largest pirated pieces of software in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, 70% or something of all users have unlicensed copies.
Right.
So if you're Mr. Adobe, you've got all the effort of making this thing, and knowing that 7 out of 10 of your end users don't pay for it.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to find a way to get that, you know, balance back somewhat, you know.
Do you honestly think that having a cloud-based service will prevent any piracy?
Well, I don't know I'm not smart enough to know how those sort of things are even done. As far as pirating stuff, you know, I just know where to go to get... No. What? No, I just know that it's done. I mean, what I was going to do before the podcast, I'm sure there's, I know there's stuff out there that you can check torrents to see what things are being downloaded the most. So movie studios can tell how many times their latest movie's been illegally downloaded.
Yeah, right.
They can't tell by who, as far as I know, but they can tell how many times. It'd be very interesting to see if you could find out how many times, I don't know, Adobe Lightroom or Photoshop's is seeded or torrented. That's how much I know this technology is torrented or, you know, peered, whatever. I don't know what they call it. But when stuff, people steal it.
Yep.
When people steal the stuff, you know. I'm sure they've done that sort of research and found that it's just, incredibly huge. Now, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many of those people that are actually getting pirated copies ever use it anyway.
Well, that's a good point.
It's how many people actually download it versus how many people actually use it, or they open it up, use it once or twice, realize they have no idea what they're doing and never open it up again.
Yeah, it's possible.
But I know, and I won't mention any names, I know people who illegally download music.
Yeah. Yep.
With the sole intention of seeing if they like it first and then going out and buying it.
Yep.
Yeah, because they want to have a bit of a taste first to make sure they're not, because they've got hard-earned money to spend. So, yeah, they have like a bit of a taste test. And that's the good thing about Adobe. You can always do a little bit of a trial.
Yep.
But, yeah, I know for a fact that the latest CS6 it was one of the easiest cracked pieces of software that anyone's ever had to do.
Oh, is that right?
Which astounds me that something that's that far down the track as far as knowing their products get copied could be that easy. Now, I don't know how it's done, but it's something about transferring one folder out of the filey thing.
Okay.
and putting a replacement folder in that filey place.
Right. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I don't want to keep talking this technical talk at you, Bruce. But, but apparently it was as easy as that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. You know, I struggled to turn the thing on, the computer, that is, let alone finding what those little filey things are.
Yeah.
But so apparently it was incredibly easy software to crack. And I guess the thing the pirates would have to do if they want to keep going forward would be find a way of fooling Adobe's online cloud.
The server, yep.
Yeah, that it's a real copy. I don't know how.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the way the subscription model will work is you will still download an installer like you would if you bought the software online anyway. And you will install the software on your machine, and then once a month, it needs to basically ET phone home to the Adobe servers and, you know, just say, hey, yes, I'm here and I'm authorized and this is my license number.
Update me with any...
And then if there are, you know, new tweaks to the program, they will be installed for you and off you go. But, it's going to be interesting. I think they're going to get some pushback on the whole pricing model.
I haven't seen that either, but...
Well, they're basically saying that for the first 12 months, anybody who has a registered copy of CS3 or later will get the subscription for $29.99 per month.
Yeah.
But after the 12 months, it then goes up to its full price, which I've heard rumors. I don't know if this is true. It's going to be around about $50 a month.
Oof.
Which,
so yeah. $600 a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think, yeah. Just thinking of my own way of saying, you can buy Photoshop for about $300 or $400.
Really?
Student editions and all that sort of stuff. And it's not, yeah, that's not the full suite. You get the full suite out of those, like $1,100. But so you need to, you've got to be able to get just individual, not the whole suite.
Yeah.
And I think $29 a month is fairly reasonable, but 50, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll be prepared to pay $300 a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I want somewhere safe to store my images as one of my backups. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always want to have the latest version.
Yeah.
$30 a month, you've ameliorated out your costs rather than having to put it all in one. You're going to find the $600 every time they upgrade the software or whatever. So
exactly.
You spread that cost out. It's a tax deduction, so I'm always happy to pay for it.
Yep.
Yeah. To me, as in a business sense, it seems reasonable. But I'm I shouldn't say that. I'm not a reasonable man. I was going to say, but I'm a reasonable man. But I'm honestly not, Bruce. I don't know. And I guess that's probably the reaction they're going to get. Some people will say that seems reasonable. Some people feel they're ripping people off. Some people think it's too cheap. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
and I guess those who aren't happy will go and find alternatives.
Exactly. As Adam Davidson said, he'll go back to using his whatever software.
Corel.
Is Corel.
Capture One he was talking about. Yeah.
Which I think is the...
isn't that the Nikon?
It is. I think so. It is.
Raw... image processing software.
How many people are going to go to GIMP instead?
Well, yeah. Some will, some won't.
Yeah, if you want free versions of Photoshop, go get GIMP. Who knows, dude?
I've heard of GIMP, but I've never used it, so I don't know what it's like. But
yeah, I downloaded it once, installed it once, opened it up once, used it once, and closed it once.
Right. And did it offer as many features as Photoshop?
I don't know. I only used it once.
I didn't have it open long enough to find out.
You know, it's like you open it up, the whole interface looks different than what you used to.
Yeah, too hard.
You know where to find anything. Exactly. I'll close that. But I gave it the full 15-second search around, so I don't think I didn't invest my time into it, because right. I did. You know, I'm not one to make snap judgments, Bruce.
Oh, dear.
So what are your thoughts? Do you feel it's a reasonable price?
I don't know. I'm still struggling to come to terms with the whole idea of there not being boxed software. I'm the kind of guy who, you know, I like to have the box sitting on the shelf with the book, with a manual in it, you know. I know everyone goes, oh, but nobody ever reads the manual. Yeah, I actually do.
Read the what?
Yeah, RTFM, yeah. I love having a manual. I really do.
Yeah, but you are a geek, though.
I am.
You're the type.
Yeah. That's right.
And I mean that the nicest possible way.
Of course, yeah.
As you can imagine.
Funnily enough,
I'm not one who reads a manual. Right. I'm the type who thinks he knows everything to start with.
See, what frustrates me about... And this is not only Adobe, because I've been seeing this happen more and more over the last 5 to 10 years. More and more software, when you go to the help menu, it launches a browser and wants to take you to the website of the company whose software you're using. And that's all well and good if I've got an internet connection, but there are lots of times when I don't have an internet connection, and then you can't access the help.
Yeah.
And that's crap.
No, you're right.
At the very least, it should install a cached copy of the help file on your machine, but take you to the website as a priority. So
how much is that going to take up on your hard drive? 4 or 5 full K?
Yeah, exactly. That's right, you know. But I find it frustrating when, you know, the only option is to have help online and then you don't have access to the interwebs. And then you're toast. So anyway, I'm still on the fence.
I would, not having seen the announcement, I would have to say that in this day and age, you can't just sell a product. Yeah, if you're Adobe, you just can't say, well, here's our software.
Buy it and love it.
And every now, you know, I'd be wanting, for that money, I'd be wanting free online webinars. I'd be wanting access to training, quality live training videos and stuff, and events. Stuff. Now, I want to pay to be part of a community, basically.
Well, don't they have all that?
Well, I don't know. I don't go there. But,
well, I mean, they have Adobe TV, where they do have, you know, their product evangelists doing video demonstrations of the new versions of the software as they come out. And I'm pretty sure they have a community environment on Adobe.com, but I want
for my $50 a month to be able to send 4 images or 5 images a month to someone who actually knows how to use the program and make them look better than they already are. Look, I shot this, but I think, geez, it doesn't look that good, that flash shot. Can you actually put some decent Photoshop skills behind it, you know? That'd be kind of good. Yeah, it's like a fail-safe. You know, I want 5 images a month looking good, because that'll make me look good.
But you could get on Model Mayhem and find image retouches.
Yeah, but you got to pay for them. Yeah, individually. Oh, okay. I want 5 a month. Yeah, it's like a library card.
Right, okay.
You know? I can just send these images off and I'm going to come back look better than I sent them, you know. Yeah, there's plenty of people out there that'll do it. Yeah, it's plenty of image retouching companies.
Yeah.
Shoot.edit, as an example, is a good one.
Oh, okay.
And you can, if you are a pro photographer who doesn't have time to post-process, well, you pay someone else to do it. But, I just want someone who's really good at Photoshop to do something with my photos. Because, in all honesty, when it comes to Photoshop, I open it up and it's always, what the hell am I going to do with this?
Yeah.
Every image is like, I don't know which way to go. Should I go this way? Should I go that way? It'd be nice to have someone. Maybe you can do your work and send it and the original to them, and they send back saying, "No, you should have done this."
Yeah, right.
Come up with the best possible way of getting each image. You know, and they show you the tips, the steps they use to get to it, and you can do it yourself. And then it'll never happen. Yeah, you know, I'm talking to dream world here.
Okay.
Or for $49 a month, I'm prepared to send all my photos to people. I don't, that way they'd have to develop the program at all for anybody. You just send the photos to them.
Right, let them do it and send it
back. Yeah, look, do you want this in colour on black and white? Ah, you know, whatever you think. I'll let you use your judgment. Yeah, you're probably smarter than I am. Anyway.
I got two other things on my list.
Do you?
Yes. One was a post that I saw on DIYphotography.net through the week regarding Creative Commons licensing.
Yes.
Now, I will confess, I didn't go and read the whole story because I haven't looked into licensing my stuff with Creative Commons because I'm just not doing enough. But I thought I would at least mention it here for anyone who is interested in, you know, using Creative Commons licensing for their works, for when you do, you know, publish your work anywhere on the interwebs. This particular blog post went into the different types of Creative Commons licenses that are available and why you might choose one sort over the other. So, again, the link will be in the show notes for anyone who's interested in checking it out.
That makes sense.
Do you use it, Glenn?
No, I don't value my photos anywhere near enough.
Right, okay.
Frankly, I just don't care what anyone does with them.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
You figure no one could make them any worse than you did.
Even the guy at Adobe. You know, these days, you know, I shoot workshop photos and I shoot my kids.
Yep.
You know, the kids don't really go on the internet and the photos, the workshop photos, you know, don't actually mean anything to me. They don't have any emotional connection. Yep. It's not like, you know, I've slaved and loved over. Whilst I enjoy a lot of the images and I like what I do. Yeah, well, I love what I do as a job, but yeah, you know, I like a lot of my images. There's no, they have no meaning. They have no end goal to the image.
No lasting value to you.
Yeah, well, I'm not shooting them for a competition. I'm not shooting them for an exhibition. I'm not shooting them for a client. I'm not shooting. Yeah, they don't have a home.
Yeah, right.
So for me, my images are, yeah, poor, sad little things. Yeah, sit there and weep in the corner of the hard drive they're nestled in.
Fair enough.
Yeah, because that's it. I mean, you think of it, when you shoot, you've got to have some intent, I guess, for the images. If you want to be incredibly creative, you've got to have a goal for what you want to do with those photos.
Yep.
Or an ambition. I just don't have that with them. So if someone was to knock one off and use it for some toothpaste advert in India or something, I don't really care that much.
Yeah. Now, it's funny that you took the conversation in that direction because the last thing...
What, toothpaste adverts in India?
Yeah, because the last thing that I wanted to talk about was...
This is very obscure if you've got a link
to this. Hey, mate, I can link anything. was, a blog post that I saw on chasejarvis.com this week. It wasn't one of Chase's own writings. It was a guest blogger. And what this guy was talking about was... what he believes is the absolute necessity to keep shooting personal creative projects as a means to developing your future potential commercial success. And he said, you know, the reason he believes so strongly in this was because when someone does actually see the stuff that you're shooting for yourself and they like it, that's when they'll come along to you and go, hey, I really need some stuff shot in that style.
Yeah.
And you do it really well. And, you know, I'd like to pay you to come and do, you know, this project that I need done in the same style. And as he said, the thing that any potential buyer of your photographic services wants is to know that you are passionate about what you do, and hence why that reinforces the need to be shooting your own personal creative projects, because as personal projects, they're going to be the types of projects that you like to shoot. You're not going to go out and deliberately shoot something that, you know, you don't enjoy shooting as a personal project. There'd be no point. And so because they're personal projects, because they're close to your heart, you do get passionate about them. And that's exactly the kind of thing a potential client wants to know is resonating within you, you know, that you are fired up about shooting in that particular style. And he sort of, you know, counterpointed that with, you know, the last thing anyone wants is to know that the photographer they've hired is just there to collect a paycheck.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting read, and of all the things that I have mentioned in this episode, it's the one thing that I read from start to finish and really enjoyed. So again, I'll put the link in the show notes. Highly recommend.
Everything I just said about why my images have no home, yeah, per se, is exactly on that, based on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that nails it to a T. It's because I don't get the chance these days to shoot with a passion for my own creative soul, as opposed to providing either a lesson or an opportunity for a customer.
Dude, you work 2 days a week. You're telling me you can't find one day of the other five?
You know, between morning naps and afternoon, it is very hard to fit the time in, I can tell you. You know, you drop the kids off at school.
Yeah.
You nap, you know.
You can't have a nap, and before you know, you got to go and pick them up again.
Well, the wife's about to start working from home, so I might have to find more to get out of the house. But that's actually, yeah, coming back full circle, that's exactly why I went out today to shoot.
Yeah.
To go out and shoot for my own pleasure.
Yep.
And for my own enjoyment, because it's good for the soul.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's good for every aspect of your creativity to be able to do it. And it, ultimately, therefore, it's good for the workshops, and it's good for everything else as well, because, you know, it keeps you fresh and keeps you thinking and changing and evolving. The fact that the model cancelled 2 minutes beforehand kind of, you know, just don't mention it again.
I find that so hard to believe. That would never happen.
Yeah, I've got to tell you, she gave me two things, though. The best, worst excuse I've ever had for the first reason why she wasn't, because she was going to be late.
Okay.
She'd lost her nose ring. And if she didn't go down and get another one, it would seal up during the day.
Oh.
There's one for the books.
Oh, that's a shocker. What was the other excuse?
Well, then I take her word that it's true, but I do know for sure she's out of work and desperate looking for a job, and a company did call and offer her trial if she came in that day and started a full-time job trial. So that's fair enough. And all power to her if she actually gets the opportunity, and because she's a nice kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, nose ring? Hello?
Well, no, maybe it was a job in a tattoo parlor.
It won't sit up, so I'll keep punching holes in it with something sharp and pointy if that's what it takes to get you along. I'm prepared to do that for you. That's how much I care.
I've got these pair of dividers in my mathematics set.
Here we go. So that was a great excuse. But that's coming back full circle, that's exactly. And for two things, to get out and shoot with my mate Dave once a month,
yep,
for the pleasure of just spending some time with him,
yep,
not work-related, and to keep the creative juices flowing. It doesn't necessarily mean the images will have any better for me, will have any more value or be shot for any particular reason other than my own sense of enjoyment, pleasure, testing, challenge, creativity.
Yeah.
I mean, because I'm not a big believer in competitions and all that kind of stuff for myself.
Right.
So I won't be shooting for that kind of stuff, and for people to pat me on the back and say nice things about me, because, you know, my ego is big enough. We don't need that. it's just for your own creative juices, and we should all be doing that anyway. As every single one of us as photographers, you know, we get bogged down in life so much that we should always be aiming to get out and do something creative at least, you know, once or twice a month. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Excellent. Well, did you have anything else to discuss?
You know, let me check this blank bit of paper in front of me and pretend I wrote something down. No, funnily enough, look at that.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. All right. Well,
it's been a week.
It has been a week. Definitely.
Now, I'd like to say a little something to our Chinese listeners before we go.
Right.
Zaijian. It's goodbye in Chinese. Zaijian.
Okay.
So I know we have a large audience in China. I'd just like to say good day to you all.
We do.
I'm not sure of the demographics. I haven't even been to the website. If there is somebody out there, please come on the Facebook page and say good day. Well, yeah, maybe ni hao, because good day is Australian.
So are you actively learning Chinese, are you?
Well, my daughter is.
Oh.
My wife is born in China and raised partly in China.
Seriously?
So, She was. Her father worked at the Australian Embassy in Beijing.
Wow.
So she grew up there and in Malaysia. So my daughter's learning Chinese, and I'm trying to encourage the language around the house by using the odd, the three words I know.
So and, what's the third word? Donut.
Donut. Go to bed. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Right. I used to know. No, that's too expensive in Chinese. As well. That slipped the memory. You know, whenever you travel somewhere where you need to haggle, you got to learn these key words.
Yeah. Right. Oh dear. All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
Me too. What are your plans for the weekend? Anything exciting? Just before we go. Should we set a challenge for anyone next week?
This weekend is Mother's Day. So Saturday will mean
me. Reminder. Appreciate it.
No worries. Saturday will require myself and Max to go shopping, obviously.
I've got a job for tomorrow now.
About 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon.
It's the worst thing. It was my wife's birthday on Monday.
Oh, yeah, really?
Trying to think of two gifts in a week? Come on. What are you going to do?
Oh, dear. So other than that, so Sunday it'll be, cook brekkie, but then I generally cook brekkie every Sunday morning, so...
nothing special there nothing for your special. Wife.
Yeah, exactly. Other than that...
I just thought of the perfect Mother's Day present for my wife.
Yep.
Yeah, Sigma 120 to 300. She's awesome. Gonna love that.
Awesome. Yeah,
maybe the bag it comes in, she could do something with, use it as another handbag. Oh, she'll be for that one.
Oh, yes, she will.
I've got a couple of workshops on this week, and Flash 2 workshop this Saturday, which is always a good challenge. Just getting into multiple flash guns. You've done the Flash 2, multiple flash guns and softboxes and colours, and so that's always a bit of fun. So look forward to that. And that's probably the most creative of all my workshops. So it's kind of good for me to get out there and do something different with those. So that's lots of fun.
Awesome.
So I've got something to look forward to. I missed the shoot today, but one to look forward to at the end of the week, so it's good.
Fantastic.
Before we go, let's set a challenge for the listeners. We did last week, the lens. Obviously we've planned this in advance, so we've a well thought out thing for them to ask or question on our Facebook this week.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of something?
I thought you had something there.
How about... what's the one thing on Photoshop you wish you knew how to do?
Oh, nice.
Yeah, just throw it out there. You know? I just thought of it. I'm only ever good at thinking under pressures. Don't ask me to plan something. Always give me a deadline. I'm far better. I'll do it 2 minutes before the deadline. But that's kind of good. What would you like to know how to do? This week, one thing, not list 47 things and 16 lenses and 27 different memory cards and ball heads. What's the one tip, one trick you'd love to do, know how to do?
Yep.
Or maybe it's style. Yeah, because there's a great street photographer called Lee Jeffries. I love the post look he gives to his photos. I'd love to know how he does it.
Right.
As an example. So maybe people can throw out some examples of people, an end image that they've seen. Doesn't mean we're going to come up with a solution, but it'd be nice to know what people want to know about those sort of programs.
Mm. Oh, yeah. For me, it's getting selections around hair.
Yes.
I always struggle with that.
Now, I would recommend that. I should personally just don't do anything with those images if that's what it takes. But the Topaz plugins apparently have some awesome thing for doing that. So maybe you might want to go look at a video for... So we might be able to find solutions, you never know. They've got some... I've seen them doing demonstrations at conferences before, and they seem to make it look very easy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so maybe it's worth a bit of a gander at that and see how you go.
Cool.
And if the lovely people at Topaz are listening. Well, because Nick and now being bought by Google, I'm no longer sponsored by them. So hello, Topaz.
Oh, really?
How you going, Topaz? Or on one, or any other plug-in companies who may be... Oh, gee, what a mercenary, I tell you. But no, so go check it out. Here's a challenge for you this week, Bruce. Check it out and report back next week.
Yep. Okay.
Done. Beautiful.
All right, mate.
It's all right, you. I'm just going to finish the rest of my minute silence.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll let you do that on your own. See you, mate.
See you. Zaijian.
Shutter Zinc, another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shutterzincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shutterzincpodcast.com.